The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It's the story.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hewitt live from the West Coast where El Diablo is blowing. The Santa Ana winds are whipping through Southern California. It's actually 81 degrees at this hour in California at John Wayne Airport. 81 degrees, middle of the night. Can you imagine what's going to happen at the Super Bowl on Sunday? Everybody's going to melt. Seriously, these Angelinos, they're going to leave in the first quarter. They're just going to be out of there. Now, we got word yesterday that the Hue Cruise, which has been off for 2 years, we haven't been on a Hue Cruise in 3 years after 18 consecutive years of Hue Cruising. The Hue Cruise is back April 18th to April 30th. We're going to try and do something different this year. We're going to broadcast from the ship. And so the people running the ship and the people running the trip sent me a list of technical requirements, to which I responded, send those to Dwayne, because I have no idea what we need. And by the way, if anything goes wrong in the broadcast of the ship, you will hear this sound on the radio. That will be Dwayne being thrown overboard. We're going to Peter Pan him, and he's going to go off just like Captain Hook. One more time. How will Dwayne? That's not a big enough. That Dwayne's a little bigger than that. You got a bigger splash?
What do you mean you have a bigger splash?
I think we need a bigger splash.
Okay, Adam, just turn the volume up.
Okay, here we go. Can we have that splash again? Dwayne, that's it.
There's your bigger splash. There's the behind the great behind the scenes of radio. You want a smaller splash? Turn down the volume. What does it matter with you?
Good morning, America. Good morning.
We were saying before we started, saying, the best parts of this show, you don't get to hear.
You never get to hear the pre-show. Because the pre-show today, we're working with new equipment. Garrett the Destroyer came in. We love Garrett. Garrett flies in and he changes all the equipment. And then for 23 hours, Dwayne pulls his, well, I can't pull his hair out, as you can see.
Yeah, oh, boy, you're funny. Oh, that's really funny.
If you were watching on the Salem News Channel, you would have gotten that one. He can't pull his hair out, but he can go, oh, my gosh, because the equipment doesn't work the way it was supposed to work. But we've got it working now. And so that's a much better camera than was here yesterday. Let me do the rundown. You know, the funny thing about this is every morning, the two founders of this company, Stu and Ed, listen every morning. And Stu always says, this is the best show in radio, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, they're really proud of this one.
They're really great. Good takeoff here. I let me give you some good news, all right? Let me give you some good news to start. The NBC Olympics, according to NPR, NBC says ratings are so far are at historic lows, even factoring in viewers on streaming platforms and NBC's cable channel. And then the head of NBC Universal TV, a fellow by the name of Mark Lazarus, quote, the sky is definitely not falling. Yes, we have run into a bunch of bad factors that have made it harder for us. All right. Rule number one. Remember this, kids. If you're on your way to school this morning in the back of the car, if anybody says the sky is not falling, run, because the sky is falling. And right now, advertisers are running away from any, because Americans have internalized that China poisoned the world and they don't want to be there and they don't want to watch it. And they spit on the sponsors of this stuff, not on the athletes. They applaud the athletes. The people are it's like sponsoring an ad in the 1940 German Olympics. There weren't any such thing. They were held in 1936 for the Steelers fans. I don't want to confuse them. But if they had held them in 1940 when the genocide was in full swing, but not available for people to see it. Or in 1944, when they were doing about 12,000 people a day at Treblinka and killing 12,000 Jews a day, and then you advertised on those Olympics, that's what you're doing in China. And that's why Americans are rejecting it and are revolted. And by the way, I think it's doing brand damage to NBC. Terrible brand damage to NBC. They're carrying the genocide Olympics and they're celebrating it. I haven't watched a minute of it. I skip over. I'm sorry for the athletes. I don't know who's competing. I don't care. I hope you don't care. I hope you never watch it. There are a million people in concentration camps. Hong Kong has been repressed. Jimmy Lai is in prison. Jimmy Lai is a great, great Christian Catholic man who has stood up to the Chinese communists forever. They've destroyed the Tibetan culture. They've driven out the Dalai Lama, but the left used to care about that. They don't anymore, and we should not. Now, on that front, yesterday's big story, this is the Telegraph. That's my UK paper to go to. Early lab-grown COVID virus found in sample lends weight to Wuhan theory. Did you hear that? Hungarian scientists claim that samples of Antarctic soil sent to a Shanghai firm in 2019 became contaminated with an unknown variant. Okay, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But bioinformatics experts from the University of Veterinary Medicine and Lorraine University in Budapest, Hungary, made the discovery by accident while examining genetic data from soil samples collected from Antarctica in the late 2018 and early 2019. The samples were sent to Sangon Biotech in Shanghai for sequencing, where they became contaminated with a previously unknown variant of COVID-19. The variant has mutations that bridge the gap between the bat coronavirus and the earliest Wuhan strain. So they sent soil to China, and it came back with COVID-19. And the only way that this COVID-19 can get to what we've got, it's a bridge COVID-19, is by genetic manipulation. So China poisoned the world, and we're having the games there. No, I know, I'm not going to watch the communist games. No way. Serious COVID-19 cases continue to decline as Omicron further ebbs. The irrelevant Tony Fauci is out there saying, whatever, we don't know, we don't care. On Ukraine, this is according to the Fred Kagan's critical threats analysis. Likely courses of action, it lists about 10. I think he's going to invade because I don't think the West has ever been this weak. Germany has left NATO effectively. So I think he's going to invade. We'll talk to Jim Tallon about that. President Biden has approved the Pentagon plan to help Americans get out of Ukraine. Isn't that good? They learned from Afghanistan. Don't leave your people behind. It's bad for business. It's bad for Americans. So the White House approved the Pentagon plan for U.S. troops in Poland to help thousands of Americans likely to flee Ukraine if Russia attacks. Yeah, I wonder how they're going to do that. Fears of Ukraine invasion rise as top Russian commanders fly to Belarus for a massive joint military drill. So if you see Patton and Omar Bradley and Eisenhower on a beach, something's going on. The Russian equivalent, Sashi and Sochi and Boris, are together on the Belarus border with their binoculars trained at Kyiv. They know something's up. The Telegraph also notes that Putin has already won. As you know, President Biden has to make a decision sometime soon on his next Supreme Court justice to replace Justice Breyer. And the leading candidate, Judge Brown Jackson, the D.C. Circuit, has some Gitmo problems. She represented a lot of Gitmo defendants, and that will just bring Afghanistan front and center. And that means we'll replay the loss of Afghanistan repeatedly, and we'll replay the disaster that was Joe Biden's non-leadership. And so they're rethinking that over at the White House. Maybe they don't want to have a Gitmo defendant going on the Supreme Court, defender on the Supreme Court. Everyone has their right to a day in court and defense counsel. Question of how did the defense counsel defend you? You can cross lines. I've only defended kids in drug lockdown for friends. I've never done a real criminal defense, and so I have no idea what it requires, but I know you have to make choices in ethics. I mean, learning the criminal law ethics stuff is kind of crazy. It takes a while. That's why I don't do it. But the new backup, Justice Kruger of the California Supreme Court, what goes on during these nomination battles is candidates or people who support Justice Brown Jackson, her clerks and her friends, are busy feeding oppo research on Justice Kruger to the Washington Post. And the best they can come up with is that Justice Kruger, when she was Deputy Solicitor General of the United States, had to take a stinker of a case, Hosanna Tabor, up to the Supreme Court. And Hosanna Tabor concerns the ministerial exception to the establishment clause, for exercise clause, religious clauses, where churches get to hire whoever they want, regardless of the discrimination rules of the United States. They get to, you know, Catholics get to hire Catholics, Lutherans get to hire Lutherans, but there aren't that many Lutherans anymore, so they have to sometimes bend the rules, but they still get to hire Lutherans. And the state of Minnesota attempted to interfere with that rule. And I think it was the state of Minnesota, wasn't it? I think so. It's a 2012 case called Hosanna Tabor Evangelical Lutheran Church. Oh, no, it was the EEOC. So they, Justice Kruger got stuck with the stinker of a case, and she lost 9-0. Because it was just obviously unconstitutional for the EEOC to do what they did to Lutheran Tabor. And so they're holding that out against her. That's not really, you get signed a case if the deputy solicitor general does. I'm still thinking Kruger is the likely one, which may be the kiss of death because I'm never right. Go Rams, beat the Bengals. I'll be right back, America. The Santa Anas are blowing in California. I'll hope to make it through the entire show. And if we can have the sound effect of Dwayne going overboard again, please, I like that. Alas, we can't do that. Dwayne's overboard already. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. Dr. Michael Oren, former Israeli ambassador to the United States, former deputy minister of Israel, is in the States, I believe. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good in not quite sunny Florida. I'm good.
Not quite sunny Florida and very early. I appreciate your getting up. Normally when I talk to you in Israel, it's like the middle of the afternoon. You're taking a nap. So this is very nice of you to get up early. Michael Oren, what is going on with these Iran talks? The American media actually doesn't have a good grip, I think, on what is happening.
Listen, nobody has a good grip. You get a gut feeling. The gut feeling is that they're almost there. And there means an agreement which is significantly worse than the 2015 JCPOA. And I think that the administration is going to try to explain it by saying this is not our fault. It's Trump's fault. We were dealt a bad hand. And we had no choice but to agree to a bad agreement that will endanger Israel, endanger the entire Middle East, eventually will endanger the entire world.
What is in their sanctions relief? Ned Price at the State Department tried to talk his way out of this, but Matt Lee at AP wouldn't let him. This is a giveaway. They are crippled. They have crippling sanctions on them. Are we going to remove those sanctions?
Well, they already started removing the sanctions on the so-called civilian aspects of the Iranian nuclear program. I don't know what the civilian aspects are because Iran is an oil and energy exporter. It doesn't really need atomic to civilian energy. Where do you make the distinction? And so they're lifting sanctions already on that. They get nothing in return. Zero. No Iranian sanctions. I want to know in what universe you think you can relieve sanctions on Iran, get nothing in return, and then expect to get more concessions from Iran. It's only one universe in which that happens. Hugh, and that's the universe in which we have negotiations who are willing to do anything.
Oh, no, it's Wendy Sherman's world. It's Wendy Sherman's world. I went to the Aspen Institute 3 years ago. It was a JCPOA wake with Tony Blinken and Wendy Sherman. Last time I'm going to that thing, the Aspen Institute's gone completely over the left wing. But they just bemoaned the JCPOA. It crippled Iran. The Trump administration crippled Iran. Now, giving them back all of their money and taking off sanctions, they're actually bringing the Middle East closer to war, aren't they?
Well, first of all, with the sanction money, it can come to hundreds of billions of dollars of sanction relief and transactions. And we all know that the Iranians aren't going to build, houses and homes and hospitals and schools with that money. They're going to use it to build more rockets, more offensive capabilities, probably a better warhead, and increase the range of their intercontinental ballistic missiles. In 10 years, they'll be able to reach the eastern seaboard of the United States. That's what they'll do. And it, by the way, this has all been borne out by experience. This is not prophecy.
No, they just released pictures of their new missile, Dr. Oren. The Iranians are quite proud they can now hit every American installation in the Middle East.
Yeah, they can also hit installations in Paris at this point.
So tell me, does
space probe, which is actually the same rocket?
Oh wow! Doesn't this mean that they're actually bringing Israel closer to the brink, and therefore Israel under, is it Article 51 or 52 of the UN Charter, have a right to strike?
Yeah, but when is the UN ever recognize our right to strike? Do you know that the UN Security Council, in its 80 years of existence, has only met one time, to discuss aggression against Israel? Every time it's met on an Israeli issue, it's always been aggression by Israel. Only once. And that was in 2015 when Nikki Haley convened the Security Council to discuss aggression against Israel one time. I wouldn't rely on Article whatever it is, the UN, to hide behind when we have to defend ourselves.
I think it's Article 51, but what I would just say is Article 51, you don't need the Security Council to confirm it. When you signed the deal, you got the deal, the right to self-defense. Iran threatens your existence. Does Bennett have the spine to do what needs to be done if it has to be done?
I hope so. I hope so. And it's not just Bennett, because under our Israeli political system, the prime minister is not the commander-in-chief. The entire government is the commander-in-chief. Within that government, there's the Inner Security Council. People usually have some kind of connection to security, former generals, former police. They have to make that decision. And it is going to be one of the weightier decisions ever in the history of the state of Israel.
When does that group meet, Dr. Oren? How often do they get together and study the data?
Well, when they have to, which is frequently, unfortunately. You know, there's the terrorist attack yesterday in Jerusalem. And so they meet, and they meet with senior military and security officials. They get briefings, and they make decisions. And they make decisions about the number of Palestinian workers who come in to work every day. It's in a great spate of terrorist attacks. Body makes the decision.
Key question, Michael Oren, last one of this week. Does Israel have the capacity to set back the Iranian nuclear program decisively for a matter of years, not months, but years?
I believe we do. And there are those in Washington who will say, well, you'll only set them back 3 years. 3 years is a long time in the Middle East, too. 3 years passed before both the Syrians and the Iraqis began to even think about renewing their military nuclear programs, and then they never did after we bombed them.
You know, I also think 3 years will get you out of the Biden administration, get rid of Wendy Sherman and Tony Blinken. So Israel being pushed into confrontation by virtue of the appeasement of the Biden administration. Dr. Michael Oren, keep coming back. Enjoy your time in the States. I'll be right back. Hour number two, America, coming up on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt from the West Coast today, live. And the Santa Anas are blowing, and it's 82 degrees at John Wayne Airport in Orange County in the middle of the night. It's really going to be a hot Super Bowl. I forgot to tell you in the last segment that the Cavaliers crushed the San Antonio Spurs last night. Sorry, K-Loop in San Antonio, but the Cavs are better than Popovich's team. At 34-21, the Cavs are only one game out of the NBA East. It's unbelievable. Just watch the Miracle Cavs. Join now by Leland Vitter. He is a host at News Nation. And good morning, Leland. How are you?
Hey, Hugh. Good to see you.
Good to see you. I asked for you specifically because of all the correspondents in America, I think you're the only one who's actually been on the ground in the Donbass. Weren't you in Ukraine for the first round of this thing?
I was. I spent a month there for the invasion of the Little Green Men and the Russian GRU folks into the Donbass, which is the eastern part of Ukraine, back in 2014. This is right before Putin shot down the airliner and kept denying that he had people there, but then you were seeing Russian tanks rolling around. So go figure.
So Leland, what I want to get from you is an American's understanding of what the Ukrainians think is going on. If you spend 30 days anywhere, you actually get to know the people. What do the people of Ukraine think is on Putin's mind?
Well, the people of Ukraine, I think you have to think of it a little bit like the people of America. And in a way, the Donbass is a little bit like, say, the southern part of Texas, right on the border. A lot of the people who are in the Donbass, the area that Putin is going to roll into first, are ethnically Russian. So a number of them support the Russians. Now, some of them believe that they're both Ukrainian and Russian, but there's a group that's pro-Russian. The larger part of Ukraine is terrified because they know that Vladimir Putin views losing Ukraine as one of the great tragedies of the 20th century. It was the fall of the Soviet Empire, which Vladimir Putin viewed as one of the great creations of our time and of our world. So they realize that Putin is a man to take seriously. When he says he wants something back, he's probably willing to use force to get it. The other thing they know is that Putin, in a way, is a coward and that he is a bully. And bullies respond to force. And that's why you're seeing so much brinksmanship from the Ukrainians. It almost sounds like President Biden is more scared of an invasion by Vladimir Putin than the Ukrainians are. And that is a calculated move by the Ukrainians to try to send a message to Putin.
Now, I'm sure you're following this as the anchor of News Nation, but yesterday the three leading Russian generals blew into Belarus, from which military exercises are underway. They could be in Kyiv in 72 hours if they launch from Belarus.
Sure.
Can you see that happening? Oh, you're back. Leland, you're back.
Hey, you know, the power of a phone call over Skype and the ring light and AirPods.
What I loved about it, though, is when you got up, I got to see you have Shelby Foote behind you on the bookshelf in that studio. So that's a pretty good home studio. So, Leland, the key part is if those Russian generals appearing in Belarus portend a march to Kyiv, what do you think will be the reaction on the ground in Ukraine?
They're going to fight because they don't have a choice. And that's why you're seeing the level of sort of calculated strength from the Ukrainians. They don't want to inflame the situation with Putin, but they have to let him know that there is going to be a real price paid in Russian lives. Why is that important? They remember what President Trump did, and for whatever you think of President Trump's foreign policy, he's responsible for more dead Russians than any president since Ronald Reagan. And you remember when there was U.S. forces in Syria, the Russians, a Russian mercenary group, which is sort of Putin's personal army, started marching towards the U.S. forces. And the U.S. kept calling the Russian generals and said, call these guys back. You need, like, you know, please don't attack us, on and on and on. The Russians kept saying, these aren't our guys. We don't have anything to say about them. And then all of a sudden, the U.S. opened fire and killed 300 Russians. And did not lose a single American. That really hurt Vladimir Putin back at home. And he was so embarrassed about it, they wouldn't even acknowledge that it happened. But every time Vladimir Putin is made to pay a serious price, he backs down. And that's why you're seeing the strength from the Ukrainians. And that's why you're also seeing Putin continue to be like the guy at the bar who keeps saying, hold me back, hold me back, hold me back, hold me back. He wants the spoils of war without actually having war.
Now, when my daughter was young, she made two mission trips to Kyiv in high school. And I heard that Kyiv is basically like Moscow, like every other city. Lots and lots of large apartment complexes, lots and lots of falling apart buildings, lots of Soviet era disrepair. Will the roads support tank advance? I mean, I have no idea what Ukrainian infrastructure is like.
Ukrainian infrastructure is terrible, which is why this is happening right now, because the ground is all frozen. Eastern Ukraine is a little bit, say, like, I don't know, Nebraska in a way.
But they don't have any football either? No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. I mean, sometimes the truth hurts, right?
Yeah.
But if you're moving across large parts of land with tanks and armor, roads get torn up. What's very helpful is frozen ground. And so right now the ground in eastern Ukraine and moving towards Kyiv is frozen. So you can move huge columns of armor across there. The window for that obviously is dependent on the weather, which is why everyone says, oh, it could happen next week, next week, next week, is because once the ground thaws and it's mud and you can't move all the support equipment to move an army, suddenly that fight becomes really, really difficult, and it becomes a lot easier the advantage turns to the Ukrainians to play defense from the Russians to play offense and being able to move quickly.
And Leland Vitter, when you were in Ukraine in 2014, prior to the invasion under Barack Obama, and you talked to Ukrainian troops, are they professional? Are they like talking to American soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines? Are they together and effective and efficient? I know they've deployed with NATO in Afghanistan. I know they have been in Iraq. What's your impression of Ukrainian military?
Great question. I would say that they are getting a lot better. When I was there, it was a pretty disheveled group, certainly brave and certainly patriotic, but very lacking in weapons, in the professional training that you'd expect from squared away Americans or Brits or even French forces. Their special forces weren't bad. They had trained with the United States, so they had a
a level of professionalism that was impressive. At least from what I have heard from people who've been over there and people who've worked with the Ukrainian army, is in the past 6 years or 8 years, the Ukrainians have known this was coming and have been preparing for it every day. So their military has stepped up, and you might remember President Obama was sending MREs and blankets and night vision to the Ukrainians to stop the Russians or help them stop the Russians. And then President Trump started sending Javelin anti-tank weapons, anti-aircraft radars, those kinds of things over. So the level of equipment and training has stepped way up by the Ukrainians. Another reason that Vladimir Putin is a little scared to go in is all of a sudden the Ukrainians start blowing up Russian tanks. That doesn't really play well back home in St. Petersburg.
And there will be film at 11. I got to tell you, Leland, you're the only guy I know on television who's actually been to the Donbass for 30 days. What were the hotels like?
Actually, quite nice, believe it or not.
That's it. That we'll follow up on that because I'm kind of surprised by that. Leland Vittert, News Nation Now. Watch him tonight. Follow him on Twitter at Leland Vittert. Come right back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Thank you, Leland.
Up down, got it, hustlers.
We continue to recommend masking in areas of high and substantial transmission. That's much of the country right now in public indoor settings. And so we're, of course, taking a close look at this in real time, and we're evaluating rates of transmission of, as well as rates of severe outcomes as we look at updating and reviewing our guidance.
Does anybody care what Rochelle Walensky and Anthony Fauci say anymore? Jim Garrity of National Review has covered this like nobody else. Joins me. Good morning, Jim. What do you think?
Hugh, look at the bright side. She's no longer getting out a crystal ball. She's no longer saying that she has heard from the spirits, or that she has this vision of doom coming upon us, as she was doing, I think it was probably right around last spring, right before things, cases really, really went down and we had our best stretch. Things were at their very best. There's been this, you know, Walensky, I'll start out by saying something nice and saying she's got a really tough job. Sometimes the data isn't crystal clear. She's trying to placate a bunch of different constituencies. And when she says something like schools can operate safely very early in the Biden administration, there's always a chance that Jen Psaki will come out and completely cut the legs out from under her and say, oh, that's just her personal opinion. She's just speaking in her personal capacity, not as director of the CDC.
So Jim,
with all that
what?
In mind...
Yeah, go ahead.
She's pretty darn bad at this job. The public communication job is really, really, she's just botching it completely.
And Anthony Fauci's worse because he's run through the seed corn. He ate the seed corn. Now, the question is, what is going on in the country that the Beltway doesn't understand? Because Glenn Youngkin did a victory lap on Sean Hannity last night. They got a big win in Virginia. The legislature and a bipartisan rolled back mask mandates. Democrat governors are running away from mask mandates. Everyone has recognized it is a nightmare for anyone on the ballot in the fall. And I don't think it's too late to change that. But what is the disconnect?
Well, first thing is that, you know, Walensky and Fauci and Francis Collins, I guess he's departed NIH, but pardon me, doing so much better, as you can tell, Hugh.
Yeah. How are you feeling, by the way?
Those folks don't face voters. They, you know, they can make any edict or make any recommendation they like. No one's ever going to vote Rochelle Walensky out of office. So, you know, on paper, that's a good thing. On paper, they don't have to worry about being popular. The bad news is that the other thing is that the kinds of people who choose to become public health experts, the kinds of people who choose to become virologists and epidemiologists and folks like that, they're not the people who go skydiving on the weekends. They already have exceptionally low tolerance for risk. As I'm going through, I'm writing today's Morning Jolt as we speak, Hugh.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I was, the NBC News reporter who was going around saying, everything is open, what are you people complaining about? Why are you griping about having to wear a mask to Cracker Barrel or something like that? By the way, the counties that have Cracker Barrel are probably the ones that don't have mask mandates.
Yep.
That's the first observation. But the second thing is that he says, everything is open. Not really. There are fewer government edicts telling people you cannot do this, this is not open, things like that. But if you talk to anybody who's in the event planning business, or you look at collegiate athletic events, you know, they've had, you know, Omicron has forced a lot of cancellations. Just over the course of this, you know, just a quick Google search, science conferences, live theater performances all over Broadway, local festivals, charity walks, mixed martial arts competitions, piano recitals, symphony orchestra performances, cruises, the USA World Swimming Championships, and state legislative meetings. Over the past 2 months, Omicron has been canceling things left and right. Now, this may be, you know, entirely necessary or wise, but whenever he's like, oh, things are back to normal, what do you go? No, things are not back to normal. They're not even close to back to normal. That's where we're going through the Omicron phase. You know, so this idea of, oh, why are people whining? Why are people complaining? Because they elected a guy who said, I'm not going to shut down the country. I'm not going to shut down the economy. I'm going to shut down the virus. And yet here we are. The virus is not shut down. And you look at supply chain problems and inflation, people might feel like, oh, actually, it does feel like the economy's kind of shut down.
Okay, this is my transition story, but the Super Bowl is this weekend. L.A. is filling up with unmasked athletes and superstars and celebrity, and it's just the typical Super Bowl magnified on steroids because it's in L.A., and nobody's wearing a mask. I mean, California's done. And I was in Laguna Beach this weekend. Laguna Beach is done, and Laguna Beach bans everything. What is the disconnect? Things might be being canceled by risk-averse people, but America is done. They have decided that you have a chance to get a vaccine and a booster. Yep. You have a chance to make a decision. Kids are not going to put up with this anymore. I just think the Virginia vote shows they're done. It was not even close in the Virginia Senate, which is a Democrat-majority Senate.
Yeah, 10 Democratic senators basically went along and said, okay, we're all right with letting parents decide for themselves. 9 Democratic state senators went the other way, and I, you know, saying, yes, we want to keep this in place. And rarely, as I wrote yesterday in the morning, Joel, rarely do you see a state party's leadership that is not just out of touch with public opinion as a whole, which is, you know, pretty bad, but they weren't even in touch with the actual mood of their own rank and file members in the state legislature. Like, you should be losing your job.
You should chat Peterman, who is the Democrat senator from Arlington. Came on the show last week. He said, no, we're not doing this anymore, and the school districts have to wake up. And so they have looked at some polling. I just have to assume that Democrats have figured out from their constituents and from mothers and from, in fact, I got another one I got to play for you today. This is a Naperville, Illinois parent. Yeah, we got enough time. Let's play this for Jim Garrity, a Naperville, Illinois parent at a school board meeting, cut number 19.
I am here for my daughter. And beyond anything else, she loves school. The harm you have done to her, she still loves school. She loves her teachers, her therapists, her helpers, above all, her principal at Scott School. Her team goes above and beyond for her. Her LBS has gone to the moon and back for her. She's a happy and outgoing girl. And the countless positive and influential people that have helped her along the way, her team and her principal and at Scott School have been such great role models to her. Her dream is to work there someday. She talks nothing else than wanting to be a teacher or wanting to go to school and be and work at school. I can only name a few people in her life that have harmed her and actively participated in holding her back and stopping her progress, and almost every one of them is in this room tonight. The past 2 years have been shameful as the district has been busy lauding themselves while they enact policies that have absolutely been devastating to her group. We have seen 2 years of almost no growth, missed goals removed. Her team is doing everything that they can. We've hired specialists. She still loves school. My 10-year-old daughter has kept these feelings to herself about how much she desperately wants to take her mask off. When we told her that it may be possible on Monday, she cried, tears. She jumped up and down. She told us that she was so excited that people may finally be able to understand her. You have harmed her so much with this. Everybody talks about everybody's got to be safe. Everybody's got to have everything. And we've left so many children behind. We've tried to protect her. This morning, she got up before us, and she started singing a song to her dolls about how excited she was that kids were finally going to be able to see her smile, that she was going to be able to see other kids' smiles, that kids would be able to understand her, and she would stop being picked on because they could not understand her through her mask, because her speech has been delayed even more than her special needs. She is a strong girl, but when I heard her do that, and I heard the things that she said, it broke me. I will never forgive myself for not fighting more.
Jim Garrity, this is not an isolated incident. The people who think that we are going to forget by November and 2024 are wrong.
correct you, and let me just observe. I think every single American, every single child in America deserves the right to communicate clearly and directly and with nothing obstructing them, the same way that Stacey Abrams deserved in that elementary school classroom down in Georgia.
Exactly.
You know, like the interesting thing is that, you know, Stacey Abrams said, well, look, I had to do it because I was speaking to the kids and there were some kids who were remotely. That's why it was important for me not to wear a mask. But nobody wasn't. But she couldn't understand that anybody else could ever have that same need to communicate clearly with anybody else. It was spectacular, the example there.
Now, yes. Jim, how are you doing? You're recovering from COVID. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Honest to goodness, the self-isolation was tougher than the actual. Probably by the time we talked last week, Thursday, Friday, I was feeling significantly better. But I could not get that little pink line on the instant test to go away until Tuesday.
Okay.
So, you know, so Saturday, Sunday, Monday, I'm just, you know, feeling about 80-90% of what I'm feeling. And, you know,
one. So I love talking to you because it's like talking to my daughter who has kids in school. So I get a direct line to kids in school. Your boys don't mind it so much. What's the deal? Are people taking off their masks yet, or are they waiting?
Well, I don't know what the circumstance of that, of the parent you just played the audio of. But one of the things I was quizzing my sons on this, and they pointed out they don't have to wear their masks during lunch. You know, because, duh, you got to eat. And my older son, they have pretty laid-back rules for who sits with who. My younger son, they still are seating, and, you know, they have assigned seats. But at that point, it sounds like in that time period, the teachers are and the you know school policies are more relaxed. So they at least have one stretch of the day where they get to take their masks off and see each other and you know, act somewhat normally. Now, here's the thing. If they're doing that and the schools are not exploding with cases... Oh. Why couldn't they do that in class?
Oh, Jim, I got to tell you about my granddaughter who rides a bus every day. And all day long, they are sliced and diced, and they have screens up and masks on. Then they all jam, because they don't have enough bus drivers, they sit three to a seat without seat belts and no masks driving home. It's just absolutely, and my daughter, who's, you know, it's just really stupid. And America's really stupid. About, I mean, school districts, they're going to get crushed.
As Bill Bennett said, we're not good at that. the best, I don't know if you have time, Hugh, but one terrific last final, you know, contrast there. For a while, Marin County, and of course it's Marin County out in California, but they were my favorite example in that they were capping the capacity for watching school athletic events. I think it was 10%, 25%. It was much smaller than usual. And, you know, now at the same time, you just go a little bit further down south from Marin County into San Francisco. Golden State Warriors are playing, and you can pack tens of thousands of people
in
their arena. And, yes, it's a, you know, it's a slightly bigger arena, but why is it? Oh, no, if we have parents watching their kids, you know, playing basketball in high school, well, everybody's going to die. That's going to look like the, you know, the medieval plagues. But, no, Golden State Warriors, you want to watch Steph Curry? Come on in.
Come on in. We got to make some money. And those season tickets are held by the corporate elite of San Francisco. I got to tell you, James, we're going to get a history of this. Gosh, I hope I live long enough to get a history of this. Because everything that we could do wrong, we did wrong through two administrations because we did not trust the free people to make decisions for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was very interested when... the Fauci used the term, we're out of the full-blown stage of the pandemic. I suppose around December, or, you know, November, December, Omicron is spreading. Everybody is trying to, you know, they just got together for Thanksgiving. Everybody wants to get together for Christmas. Everybody's, you know, is that tickle in the back of my throat? Is it cold? Is it flu? Is it COVID-19? Boy, I'd really love to have an instant test. Nobody can find any instant test. Hugh, that wasn't the full-blown pandemic. Was that the moderately blown?
That was the moderately blown. The, you know. Jim, let me conclude by saying Dr. Fauci and Dr. Walensky have as much capacity to persuade the public on Omicron and what to do as I do on which technology to acquire and how to operate it. That's exactly the level of credibility that they have. I'll be doing car repair next. Jim Garrity, the indispensable. Go sign up for the Morning Jolt at nationalreview.com. Stay with us. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by former United States Senator Jim Talent, now with the Bipartisan Policy Center. Jim has a new article column over at the National Review. China's Uyghur persecution is all part of its grand economic scheme, which I recommend to you. Good morning, Senator Talent. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
I am cheered by the disaster that is the TV ratings of the genocide games. It appears to me that Americans are voting with their eyes and refusing to watch a game staged by a genocidal regime seeking a propaganda victory. Do you agree with my assessment?
Yeah, I really think that that is at least part of it. I mean, it has to be some explanation because the ratings are much lower. And I think it's probably disgust that everybody feels about China in general. I don't know that it's focused on Xinjiang province and the Uyghurs, but just generally the way that Beijing is throwing its weight around in the region and in the world.
Well, I also believe that we fairly conclusively concluded that they poisoned the world and that the world is not happy with them. And they also know about the Uyghurs and they know about Tibet and they know about Hong Kong and they know about Jimmy Lai. Basically, the brand damage to China is irreparable, I think.
Right. And they haven't shown a particular sensitivity to it, but it has not been, we have not organized it as way the way we should, either on a government level or a civil society level. I think there's a level of that that they would very much not want to have to take. In other words, really exploding their narrative, I think, would be very effective in the competition.
Well, I do, too. But that requires education first. And there's a lot of Wall Street interest still, Jim Talent, in not upsetting the economic bridge between China and the United States. Has that begun to crumble?
You know, I don't think so yet. The Chinese need American capital. I mean, they're even more highly leveraged than we are. Although most of it, I think, technically you would say is corporate debt. Of course, in China, the difference between corporate debt and government debt, given the government's ownership and involvement in the economy, is very fuzzy. They also move debt around on the books. They rotate it around through their banking system, which is not really a banking system. It's government-owned and operated. And they need American capital, and they need American expertise in terms of how to manage startups and growing companies, and they've invited Wall Street in, and unfortunately, Wall Street is going in. Now, I always have to say it's in part because of either a confused or an absent government policy. I mean, average Americans, are even on Wall Street, are not aware of the significance and importance of this, so we need a purposeful effort from the government.
Last question before I go to Ukraine quickly. Do you think people are familiar with the Theranos fraud? A big Silicon Valley scheme took in a lot of money and the proprietor was just defrauding investors. Do you think China is basically the Theranos of national economies? Have they just been...
I may use that in the future, you. I'm very concerned about it. And I've said to, my former colleagues when we, when I briefed them on this, on what's going on in China, because I'm a politician, I would not want to be in a position where all of a sudden a whole bunch of American, and particularly passive American investors, people, pensioners and that sort of thing, find out that their investments have gone up in smoke because the Chinese are so opaque about the workings of their companies. I mean, there's a sense in which it's all a giant racket. And so, the interests of American investors are also at stake here, particularly, again, the passive investors who are not in a position to know the risks that are being run.
Right. They're invested in pension funds, et cetera, and the exposure to the Chinese economy is large and should be de minimis. Let's go to Ukraine. I had Leland Vittert on earlier. He expects the Ukrainians to fight hard and long. I think Putin's going in because this is a unique inflection moment of the West where we're just as weak as possible and Germany has left NATO. What do you think, Jim Talent?
Well, if I had to guess, I think he's going to do what President Biden said, called a more limited incursion. I think he's going to occupy the Donbas. You notice he's already put Russian forces formally into Belarus, and they were not there before. So that's one thing he's gained and nobody's even noticed. I think he's going to occupy the Donbas. And I think he may use that as a basis for launching some air and missile attacks in the rest of Ukraine to destabilize the Ukrainian government, put pressure on them. I think he's probably concerned that if he goes in with a full-scale mechanized invasion, he risks uniting NATO and a really strong response. And one of the things he wants is to divide and eventually destroy NATO. So I think he'll take the more – I think this is a case where the dictator will take, half the meal first and then see where he's at. But nobody really knows. And the aggressor has the initiative because we're weak and we're weak in the region and we've been weak in terms of how we've dealt with it.
Wendy, what would you like next for the United States? Sherman is abroad as well. And the Iranians are getting the deal of a century. They don't have to do anything and we give them sanctions relief.
Why in the world, particularly dealing with the Iranians, we make any deal where they do not have to perform up front is a great mystery to me. I mean, Obama did it. They're not going to do what they say they're going to do. I think that's about as safe a prediction as anybody could make.
Jim Talent, it's appeasement. I mean, you have 10 seconds. It's just plain old appeasement on our part.
Yes, and that we'll see how it hasn't worked in the past. I don't expect it to work now.
Jim Talent on Twitter with the Bipartisan Policy Center, his new National Review column. China's Uyghur persecution is all part of its grand economic scheme. Is at nationalreview.com. Come back. Hour number three coming up. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Get up, get going. There's a lot of day ahead of you, but many of you are going to be swept by buyer's remorse when you learn the inflation numbers this morning. The Wall Street Journal reporting that the average American household is spending $250 more a month after 1 year of Joe Biden being in office. 1 year, $250. Is it worth it? $3,000 a year for Joe Biden to get rid of the mean tweets. Dave in Florida, buyer's remorse in the free state of Florida.
Greetings. Yeah, I'm a former Cleveland Brown fan. Or not former. I used to watch the Browns. I used to watch Jimmy Brown run in Municipal Stadium, like you.
I salute you, but I never got to go. I didn't go until 65 after he'd retired. I was the youngest of three boys, so I didn't get to go to the championship game in 64.
See, I was the oldest of the three.
Yeah, I know. It always works out that way, so I should hang up on you, actually.
Anyway, I had a colleague, put it this way, a colleague tell me that paying $3.15 for a gallon of gasoline is the indication of a strong economy.
Oh dear. You know, I'm going to do a special report tonight, and as my research, my deep dive research, I always stop and fill up the tank on my way to talk to Brett Baer on the panel. Last week, it was $5.05. So 2 weeks ago, I did it with Brett. So it was $5.05. Last week, Shannon Bream was in for Brett. So I will do my research today. My guess is it's higher.
Well, here in Tallahassee, it's about $3.15.
You got to put in the free state of California versus the not free state of California. Dave, thank you. Mike in Arizona, buyer's remorse in the desert state.
Hi, Hugh. I'm going to make three quick points. In Arizona, with what I call the educated elite, liberals, there's no buyer's remorse. My family is a family other than me. I'm in business for myself. They're a family of educators, and they're all liberals. They all have master's and doctorate degrees, and their talk is always, well, at least we don't have Trump. They're still talking about Trump. They're blinded to this, totally blinded.
It's $3,000 a year.
I know. Let me tell you something. My clients, the business I'm in, I'm business to business. My clients are hardworking, on the ground, contractors, developers, small business people. They're conservatives. They know. They have remorse, except that they voted for Trump, but they are sick. But I'm telling you, these people in these protected, educated jobs, these teachers, they're
protected. Peggy Noonan came up with that term, the protected class, and they are insulated from this. And you're right.
Let me make one more quick point. The other thing about the Olympics, I really think people are not watching the Olympics. They just don't watch that sport. They're just separated from that sport and the Olympics anymore. I don't think it's because of China.
Oh, I disagree, because 4 years ago, Mike, the ratings were up almost 100% above what they are now. Yeah. They're down 50%. So that doesn't happen in 4 years.
You could be right. But then the last thing is,
Mike, you could be right. You are right, Hugh. You're right.
Okay. I have mea culpa. But I will say this. at the NFL level, that's where you're seeing the ideological separation. People are fleeing the NFL. because of the ideology of the league.
Yeah, it's actually because of the Browns, but they're back next year. Mike, thank you, buddy. Have you had a listen, by the way, Mick McGuire, candidate for United States Senate in Arizona, coming up after the break. Robert, Seal Beach, California, up early. The El Diablo is blowing, Michael. Be careful out there. Robert.
Hey, good morning, Hugh. I just wanted to mention that I wish inflation was only 6 or 7%. When you go to the grocery store, what was once $1.09 for a box of graham crackers is now $1.59. Eggs used to be $1.59. Now they're
The Biden inflation.
It's horrible.
Everybody ought to talk about it. In fact, the Biden inflation is affecting, thank you for the call, Robert, your ability to buy a home. You've got to hurry to andrewandtodd.com. Call them at 888-1172. Great sponsor of the show. If you're going to buy a house, every day that you wait, it gets more expensive. Every single day that you wait. Because the 10-year interest rate is up at 1.929 this morning. Am I right about that? Yeah, 1.929. It'll be at 1.3.1 tomorrow. It's just going up. Every day your interest rate is going up. That's not the interest rate you receive. It's the interest rate on which your interest rate is based. You've got to get to Andrew and Todd now. AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Get out of your renting. Get into a house. Don't pay rent. It's going to go up too. Try and get into a house. AndrewandTodd.com will pre-qualify you, give you a letter. Get out there and shop. I'll be right back with Mick McGuire, retired Air Force General, candidate for Senate in Arizona. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. On Saturday last, I was in Arizona to moderate two debates among the GOP candidates for governor and among the four of the five GOP candidates for Senate. I'm now beginning my individual interviews with each of those nine people, beginning with retired Air Force General Mick McGuire. Elect Mick, I believe, is his website. Good morning, General. Good to have you on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Morning, Hugh. Thanks for having me. Great to see you after Saturday.
It was a great event. It was fascinating. I got some questions about it. But first, let's give the audience who doesn't know you, because everything is going to depend on the Arizona Senate race, I think, to get to 51. Tell us about why Mick McGuire should be running against Mark Kelly.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Hugh. I retired April of last year after 38 years in the service, Air Force officer by trade, F-16 pilot. Flew in the first Gulf War, spent 14 years in the active duty, separated after 14 years and transitioned to the Air National Guard here in Arizona. And in 2013, was promoted to be commanding general of the Army and Air National Guard headquartered here in Phoenix. I'm fourth generation Arizonan, long history, beautiful wife, Debbie, known her since the ninth grade, married 33 years, three daughters, one grandson and one granddaughter. And, you know, people ask, why am I doing this? I'm doing this, Hugh, because I've never felt the threat of the Republic pulled tighter. Neither you or I were alive in 1861. The country needs great leaders right now that understand what's happening with the radical left, the seize for control that they're trying to grab. And we're seeing it with schools, with thought, with resources, and ultimately with gunpowder, all of these things that the left is always after.
So, General McGuire, what did you think distinguished you from the other candidates on the stage? Attorney General Brnovich wasn't there, but we did have four of the five candidates for Senate. What struck you in that debate?
Well, I think clearly you asked me a question about the triad. You let off with me, and we can debate whether or not we should be looking more at expanding SSBMs and submarines and or revamping our missile defense system and looking at next generation missiles. But the other three, it seemed if I hadn't led with that answer, wouldn't have known what we were talking about. I think the other thing that really distinguishes me is, as I mentioned to you afterwards, Hamilton and Jefferson agreed about only two things: greatest threat to the fledgling republic, a large standing army, and oppressive taxation. I would argue, Hugh, we have arrived. That in the narrowly enumerated powers in the Constitution for the federal government, they have a requirement to arm the military, but standing it and raising it is something that's left to the states unless needed. And you know right now the Army's consuming 72 cents on the dollar on personnel costs. And while I love our great soldiers, that's just unsustainable.
General, I do believe that there has to be a fundamental reassessment of the division of the military budget between the three services, the sea service, the land service, and the air service. And I don't know that that's going to happen in my lifetime, but it's got to happen if we want to remain competitive. General, first question I ask the four of you, is Mike Pence right or Donald Trump right about the ability of Mike Pence to open the ballots or discard the ballots on January 6th? What was your answer?
My response was, you asked about the Electoral College, and I said, look, the Electoral College has voted. There is no constitutional remedy for the Electoral College. I've taken some heat in Arizona for a speech I gave literally 12 hours before I ended my nearly 38 years in service, when I said the country cannot have four more years of people saying not my president. I watched it for 4 years under President Trump. It pulls mightily at those of us that wear the cloth of the nation. And I said, look, the Electoral College has voted. We are suffering the tragic results of the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and Mark Kelly administration. But we elect the president by and through the Electoral College. The strongest argument I've made to my colleagues is we have to have voter ID laws. We have to have some mandatory hand counts here in Arizona. We have to consider getting rid of the platinum ballot, which is a law here in Arizona that allows just statewide federal candidates to be printed on a ballot same day. All of these things, I think, are challenging. But the truth of the matter is there is no constitutional remedy to the Electoral College. And I, as a constitutional conservative Republican, will never open that debate with the radical left, as you know, Hugh, because they want national popular vote. I'll never walk away from the Electoral College.
Well, you're smart. You're very smart to have that response. But I want to drill down. Vice President Pence said he did not have the authority to reject state elector lists. Former President Trump said he did. With whom do you agree?
I agree with Vice President Pence for this reason. As a states' rights guy, the electors are signed by of and through the states. Once they are delivered to the states, the vice president cannot usurp the rights of a republic of independent states and simply delivers those to the Electoral College for those 535. The individual that receives 270 or greater votes is the president. And I remember, Hugh, I'm not an attorney. I'm an F-16 pilot by trade. As I told you in the debate, I trained to make the trees big and small and put warheads on foreheads. That's what I did. Flew in the first Gulf War. But I can tell you this, those 270 electoral votes are assigned by of and through the states, not by the vice president of the United States. We have to be very careful about what we ask for.
So, General McGuire, quick question. What's better, an F-18 or an F-16?
An F-16 is clearly the smoothest flying, most capable. 4,000 hours in that thing, Hugh. It is a great piece of gear. You remember this, single seat, single engine. It's the only way to go. They call it the Widowmaker for a reason.
Well, I've got a F-18 pilot in the family, so I always have to ask just to make sure. He said, you guys get to land on ground. He has to hit a carrier in the middle of the ocean. So I'm just telling you.
Yeah,
you've heard that.
Yeah.
Now, tell me something. I've never actually talked to an adjutant general before. What is the authority of the governor vis-a-vis the Arizona National Guard, vis-a-vis the border? What can the governor do?
Well, the governor is the commander in chief of the National Guard at rest. And so you go back to the summer of 2020, Hugh. At one point, I was the commanding general of the Guard for nearly 8 years. But in 2020, at one point, we had the largest mobilization of the Guard since 1942. We had over 85% of all of our citizen soldiers and airmen on duty for four primary missions. We had 1,030 assigned to the border. We had over 3,000 in response to COVID. We had 1,495 on the streets of five different counties and 12 cities in response to civil unrest in the summer of 2020, and over 280 of them for wildland fires. You may have remembered we were here having a major wildland fire, and then they were out at Lake Shasta. And we helped out with those guys that recovered out there in California.
How many National Guardsmen does Arizona have?
8,300.
Well, you were using them all. Now, you were the adjutant general for 8 years?
Almost 8 years. I was appointed by Governor Brewer, and Governor Ducey reappointed me. Was like I said, I was down in Tucson flying F-16s as the wing commander. We had some issues up here with misconduct. I relocated from down in Tucson. My family's been four generations in Arizona after I left the active Air Force, came back home here to Arizona, and figured I'd just retire there. But came up, had the opportunity to serve here, and saw things I never thought I'd see. You know, the one thing, Hugh, that I mentioned to you is You know, the oldest position in our government, 1634, Massachusetts Bay Colony territorial governor. Second oldest position in our government, adjutant general. Every state has one, 1636. Predates the Constitution and all of the things that we talk about as constitutionalists by a long, long way. Well, this is how Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution was written. It says we will raise an army and maintain a navy. We use different verbs for a reason. It's something that we have to get after. And we talk about peace through strength. Peace through strength means having the ability to conscript the patriotic and political capital of this nation when needed. But the founders knew that standing an army would be an excessive tax burden, and we would raise it only when needed. You know, we can get into a whole nother show about how we got in this situation. But my argument is, when the Air Force divorced the Army in 1947, we never post-mobilized from World War II.
Well, talk to me about how you expect to win. I saw four good candidates on Saturday. I know Brnovich, General Brnovich, is a friend of mine. He's a good candidate, too. Got five good candidates. How does Mick McGuire win?
Well, I think right now I've done 30,000 miles. 30,000 miles in 7 months. This state is basically 400 by 400. I've been out and about talking to voters. I've been just saturating the rural counties. And the idea here is to make sure I hold my own in the urban areas, and the rural counties are going to pick the winner. They feel forgotten. This state, as I mentioned, is cattle growers, copper miners, and cotton farmers. And I've been out and about talking to them. And as I go forward, I continue to just raise an army. That's what I keep saying. This is about a grassroots campaign. Money is a factor, but it's not the only factor, Hugh. And the best example is the Real Clear Politics polling has me number two behind Brnovich. I mentioned in the debate, this is about character and courage. I was very disappointed in him. He was served with me in the Guard, was disappointed that he had not taken the time to face 800 constituents and you and Kathy at the debate. But going out there, going back to that polling, I'm number two. Last three quarters in that polling, I've only spent $59,000 on Facebook ads. I'm kind of like the truck driver in New Jersey in that race out there in the last cycle.
General, I got to ask you about the debate itself. General Brnovich sent me his regards. He couldn't be there. He had a conflict. But I'm curious if you think any of those are better than Mike Kelly. Are any of the five Republicans better than Mark Kelly?
All five of us are better than Mark Kelly. Right now, Mark Kelly is the target. We have to realize, though, Hugh, it's not going to be an easy out. You know, this is how small Arizona is. My brother's wife went to elementary school with Gabby Giffords.
Arizona is a tiny place. Honest to goodness, it is a tiny place. Whenever I go over there, I'm amazed. I've been on the air for 20 years in Arizona, in Tucson and Phoenix, and I know everyone. Now I'm on in Prescott. And I'm just amazed at 800 people on a Saturday morning at 8:30 a.m. showing up for a Senate debate. Doesn't that strike you as a demand signal?
Oh, I can tell you this. The energy is real, Hugh. I realized how critical this race was when I had been. I've never run for any office. As I said, I wore the cloth of the nation for 38 years. I showed up at an event in July of 2021, 5 weeks after I announced, out in Sun City West, over 300 people there, and the temperature outside was 110 degrees in the middle of the summer in a primary retirement community. And I looked at the legislative district chair, and he said, the energy is real. I mean, there are people that are terrified. They're afraid about what's happening. They don't know what's next. They feel abandoned. And I keep giving them a message of hope.
And well, you know, General, keep that up, because when the inflation number comes out today, it's going to be another hit to the average American, and the energy is going to stay high. 7.5. Oh, General, you get a quick exit. Inflation 7.5% in January.
Oh, terrible! And that's the independent voter. I go to get my hair cut. The beautiful woman that's been cutting my hair looked at me and said, "General, you're running for Senate. Am I going to be able to afford gas and commodities in a year?" And I said, the way that Biden has shut off our oil independence and ability to export, I'm not certain. They are running hard against the people. This inflation thing, the effect on jobs, there is going to be a red wave. The message of hope I give them is an army without hope is not a defeated army. As I mentioned the other day, Hugh, here in Arizona, we're going to raise an army of voters that say, I pick Mick.
I hope you will keep coming back, General. We'll go through all five and we'll do it again. Talk to you next time on the next round. Mick, Elect Mick is his website. Thank you, General.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.